another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a great nation despite the fact that our greatest political party, which I believe is the Republican Party, it is the party that basically dominated American politics for the longest period of time since its formation in 1854. But the Republican Party is facing all kinds of conflicts right now, and one of them in the Republican House caucus. Liz Cheney, who is head of the House Republican Conference, that means that she is the number three official for the Republicans in the House of Representatives. Number one, Kevin McCarthy, who is the minority leader, who hopes to become Speaker when the Republicans take control of the House in November's election. And they have an excellent chance of doing that. Precisely because they are so close. It's a 7-seat difference right now. So a switch of 4 seats, or it will be 5 seats after there's another special election, overwhelmingly Democratic district. If they win 5 seats in the next election and the average party out of power against a president in his first off-year election wins 28 seats, they should be able to do it. But not if they go forward and they campaign arguing about the election of 2020 and whether it was stolen or not. That is, if you want to talk about a loser issue, an issue that divides Republicans and unites Democrats, that's how you lose elections. You unite the other side and divide your own side. It's not a good thing. And right now, the war against Liz Cheney is a misdirected target. There's a piece in the Wall Street Journal today. It's actually an editorial by the editors of the Wall Street Journal under the heading Purging Liz Cheney. And the subheading for the editorial is GOP leaders shouldn't have to lie about 2020 to keep their job. And they talk about President Trump having put out a statement on Monday. Of course, he can't do tweeting anymore since he's banned from Twitter and from Facebook and elsewhere. But we'll get to that. He's striking back and he's issuing statements from his own independent platform right now. But the Wall Street Journal writes that Trump on Monday issued a statement that, quote, the fraudulent presidential election of 2020 will be from this day forth known as the big lie. And the big lie is all in caps. And then Representative Cheney responded on Twitter, the 2020 presidential election was not stolen. Anyone who claims it was is spreading the big lie, turning their back on the rule of law and poisoning our democratic system. And the Wall Street Journal says this has angered some of the House GOP. And yesterday, Axios caught House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy on a hot mic saying, I've had it with her. But Mr. McCarthy knows that Ms. Cheney is right. The election was not stolen. Yet Mr. Trump wants an endorsement of his stolen claim to be a litmus test for every Republican candidate. He's the one who wants to refight his losing campaign. There's no evidence of any of this was decisive. They're talking about that. The point is, they say that Republicans will look foolish or worse to swing voters if they refight 2020 and 2022. I agree with that. They can truthfully say that the Democrats used lawsuits to exploit the pandemic to change the election rules in some states, but they can also say Democratic judges on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court let Democrats get away with it. Democrats did a better job of exploiting the pandemic election rules than did the GOP. But there's no evidence any of this was decisive, as Mr. Trump lost the popular vote in a rout, and the Electoral College by a similar margin to what he won in 2016. It wasn't similar, it was identical. Biden got 306 electoral votes. President Trump won 306 electoral votes. Then there were two faithless of electors who didn't vote for him. So they had 304. Mr. Trump lost even as Republicans gained 12 seats in the House. The election was close, but not as close as others in American history. Republicans, writes the Journal, should find a way to speak this truth to voters in 2022 and quickly turn to running on an agenda for the future that will check Mr. Biden and his cradle-to-grave entitlement state. Purging Liz Cheney for honesty would diminish the party. Well, I think they're right about that. And I'll tell you who else I think agrees with that point of view is the minority leader, the leader of 50 Republicans in the U.S. Senate, Mitch McConnell. He was asked today, this is clip 13, about Cheney's future. And listen to how he responded.
Yeah, 100% of our focus is on stopping this new administration. I think the best way to look at what this new administration is, the president may have won the nomination, but Bernie Sanders won the argument about what the new administration should be like. We're confronted with severe challenges from a new administration and a narrow majority of Democrats in the House and a 50-50 Senate to turn America into a socialist country, and that's 100% of my focus.
But isn't it a concern that a sizable chunk of the Republican base doesn't believe that this election is valid?
100% of my focus is on standing up to this administration. What we have in the United States Senate is total unity from Susan Collins to Ted Cruz in opposition to what the new Biden administration is trying to do to this country.
Okay, he ignored a question, which is a question that, of course, the left-leaning media love to bring up. And the question is basically based on a CNN poll that was released at the end of last week. It's a recent poll. And one of the things that they asked in the poll is they asked, do you believe that Joe Biden legitimately won enough votes to become president? And that poll suggests that the share of Americans who believe the falsehood that has roughly held steady since before he took office in January 30th, it's 30%. 30% of all Americans think Biden did not legitimately win the election. But it's a majority of all Republicans. Here is the problem. Even if it is 70% of Republicans, as this poll suggests, and when you actually look at the details of the poll, I think that's exaggerated. I don't think it is 70% of Republicans. But if it's a lot of Republicans, what's the point? You're not going to convince other Americans that you're right. Every day that goes on with Joe Biden as president, whether you like Joe Biden or hate his guts or think he's destroying the country or think he's leading to overspending and enlarging government and raising taxes and all kinds of stuff that I hate too, even if you don't like Joe Biden, every day he serves as president, the weaker and weaker and weaker the case gets that he's not a legitimate president. He's functioning that way. And if you have a situation where where at least 30% of Republicans already disagree with you about the stolen election, and very few independents and no Democrats agree with you about the stolen election, why would you want to run on that? Leave it alone. It's also irrelevant. I think it's striking and it's kind of sad that one of the first statements by President Trump on his new platform is not about what Biden is doing to the country. It's all about that election of 2020. So what did the president say? And what's going to happen to Liz Cheney and her bid to hold her job? Or has she given up on it? There's some reports that say she's given up on it. We'll get to that and more coming up on The Medved Show.
This is going to be a little bit provocative.
The Michael Medved Show.
on the Michael Medved Show, I spoke about the new statement that was issued by President Trump. It's longer than a tweet, but not much. And statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. That's what it says on the top. And then I'll read you the statement exactly as the president wrote it. He writes, "Warmonger Liz Cheney, who has virtually no support left in the great state of Wyoming, continues to unknowingly and foolishly say that there was no election fraud in the 2020 presidential election, when in fact the evidence, including no legislative approvals as demanded by the U.S. Constitution, shows the exact opposite. Had Mike Pence referred the information on six states, only need two," he says that in parentheses, "back to state legislatures, and had gutless and clueless minority leader Mitch McConnell," he blew two seats in Georgia that should have been lost, that's in parentheses, "that should never have been lost, pardon me. If Mitch McConnell had fought to expose all of the corruption that was presented at the time, with more found since, we would have had a far different presidential result, and our country would not be turning into a socialist nightmare. Exclamation point, never give up." Can you think of anything more depressing or destructive to Republican chances than a campaign in 2022 fought out on this basis? It's hard for me to even imagine a more depressing rallying cry for Republicans right now. It seems to me that the people who are saying that the Republican Party needs to be more positive, look at the response to Tim Scott, who gave a positive, reasonable, effective statement of Republican principle and opposition and suggested some alternatives to Biden's program. But to suggest as an alternative that we go through a huge battle over whether the election was valid or not, it seems to me is an extraordinarily misguided idea. And what about the idea that you have a majority according to a CNN poll? Well, first of all, I thought Republicans looked at CNN polls dubiously, with all kinds of doubts about their validity. So you're going to trust this CNN poll that says that 70% of Republicans think that Biden did not get a legitimate victory from the voters last time. Look, it's a problem. It's always a problem when you have people believing stuff that isn't true. And even if it's not 70%, even if it's smaller, it's still a problem. But can I refer you to something else? There were a majority of Democrats, heavy majority, who believed that President Trump had colluded with Russia. They were wrong. That wasn't true. But they kept banging on that. They're still banging on that. And every time they do, they lose. And by the way, the same thing was true with the birther nonsense against President Obama. There was never the slightest reason to believe for one moment that he was born in Kenya. He wasn't. And the fact that Republicans were harping on that and banging on it, Trump would not have won the election, I don't believe, in 2016 if he hadn't abandoned the birtherism crap long before, actually, the election actually took place. Doesn't help. And harping on the stolen election narrative doesn't help. When Mitch McConnell, you just heard moments ago, said that he was devoting 100% of his attention to trying to counter, to stand up to the Biden administration. Press Secretary Jen Psaki was asked about that in the White House press briefing today. Here's what she said. It's clip number 12.
Well, I guess the contrast for people to consider is 100% of our focus is on delivering relief to the American people, on getting the pandemic under control and putting people back to work. And we welcome support, engagement, and work with the Republicans on that.
okay, glib, fine, expected response. Look, I think we ought to salute Leader McConnell for at least turning attention away from this infighting, which doesn't really help anybody. And here's a report from Politico, which is fascinating. Liz Cheney is not fighting to hold on to her job as House GOP conference chair, even as top Republican leaders openly campaign to replace her in the number three spot. Steve Scalise, the number two Republican in the House, has already endorsed Elise Stefanik from New York. And by the way, what's fascinating about all of this is, according to the American Conservative Union, which does lifetime voting records, Liz Cheney has a 78% lifetime conservative voting record. And Elise Stefanik, 44%. She is known to be one of the more moderate, reflecting her district. She's known to be one of the more moderate Republicans in the House. And by the way, I think she's a fine choice if someone's going to replace Liz Cheney. But it is not yet clear whether this battle is going to go forward and be a battle. Last time that they had a fight to get rid of Liz Cheney, she won 145-61. But and they say in the Politico, she's also facing a tough primary race next year in Wyoming with pro-Trump challengers already lining up to take her out. The fact that they're lining up is actually good news for her, because they will divide the anti-Cheney vote. If there were a straight one-on-one battle between Liz Cheney and some pro-Trump candidate, one pro-Trump candidate in Wyoming, I think it's possible she could have a very tough race, because Trump carried Wyoming with 70% of the vote. But the truth is, with a whole bunch of different contestants against her, I think she's likely to come out on top. Cheney appears completely comfortable with the idea, writes Politico, that she may be toppled for sticking to her beliefs. Even with her leadership job on the line, Cheney continued to double down this week, sending a clear signal to her colleagues that she won't go quietly. Trump released a Wednesday statement supporting Representative Stefanik to succeed Cheney in leadership, lauding her as a tough and smart communicator. In another Wednesday statement, the former president again blasted Cheney for failing to support his unfounded charges of widespread fraud in 2020, etc. The rapid race to oust and replace Cheney comes as the relationship between Cheney and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy hits an all-time low in recent weeks. Things came to a head during the House GOP retreat last week. What happened? Well, we will get to that, but we'll also get to another House that just passed a horrible bill raising taxes. Raising taxes how high? Potentially over 50%. Is that a legitimate tax rate? We'll talk about that with the leaders of the Washington Policy Center coming right up.
More of Michael Medved in a moment.
Horrible habit of getting into power and then raising taxes, which kills business development, which hurts people, which takes money away from people that those individuals have earned or that their investments have earned. And there's a new editorial in the Wall Street Journal, which is just devastating, about something that was just done here in Washington State, where if the Biden administration follows through with its tax plans federally, then there will be a combined federal-state tax rate in Washington State of over 50%. We're going to talk about that with Jason Mercier, who is the director of the Center for Government Reform at Washington Policy Center. He's based in Tri-Cities, Washington. And he serves on the boards of the Washington Coalition for Open Government and Verify More, and was an advisor to the 2002 Washington State Tax Structure Committee. Jason, thank you so much for joining us.
Michael, thanks for having me on.
And the work of the Washington Policy Center, Not a lot of love from the Washington Policy Center, which represents conservative values in Olympia, our state capital. Not a lot of love for this new tax hike that Governor Inslee and the Democrats were celebrating yesterday, right?
Yes, yesterday morning, Washington was part of a very exclusive club across the country. We were one of 9 states without an income tax on capital gains, and we were one of 7 states without any type of tax on income. This was something that put us at a competitive advantage, something our Commerce Department advertised, saying you should choose Washington because you're going to be at this advantage of no income taxes. But unfortunately, yesterday afternoon, the governor, with the stroke of his pen, threw that all away. We no longer can claim to be a state that doesn't impose an income tax because of this new capital gains income tax. And I say that very specifically, that the governor and the sponsors of this call it an excise tax, but there is not a tax professional in the world that agrees with them. You don't have excise taxes on income. And we know from the IRS, we know from the Congressional Budget Office, in fact, we know from all 49 other states, that capital gains are income, taxes on them are income taxes, and that is now a door the state of Washington has opened.
Well, there's a real question about whether this conflicts with a state constitution. What does a state constitution say that should block this new capital gains tax?
Yeah, the Constitution of Washington has a very broad definition of property. In fact, the broadest definition of any state, and it was actually adopted by the voters in 1930 through the 14th Amendment. And it says property is everything subject to ownership, whether tangible or intangible. And for almost 100 years, the state Supreme Court has said that you own your income, which is pretty logical. And if you own your income underneath our Constitution, that makes it property. Now, it's not to say you can't have an income tax in Washington. It just has to conform with the uniformity and 1% restrictions that we have on property taxes. And obviously, a 7% income tax on capital gains violates that restriction. And this has not been a secret. The Supreme Court has repeatedly, over this 100 years, ruled that we own our income. And in fact, the voters have rejected 6 constitutional amendments to change that, to say, no, it's okay to have a graduated income tax. But the people have consistently rejected that. So what does this have to do with what the legislature and the governor just signed? We know from public records the purpose of this capital gains tax is not to impose this type of tax because it's very volatile. We are now the only state in the country with a standalone tax on capital gains. But it was to set up a lawsuit to see if the Supreme Court will change all their prior rulings so that they could have a graduated income tax without a constitutional amendment. And those lawsuits have already been filed. 2 have now been put into play to try to uphold the Constitution and strike down this unconstitutional tax.
So what, obviously one of the things that voters have to do about it is to change the state legislature in 2022. Is there indications that there is some growing concern about this idea of a 7% income tax on capital gains?
Well, a couple of things from that question. The legislature went out of their way to prohibit the people's right of referendum, which is one of our constitutional rights to overturn this. And in fact, one of the Democratic legislators that voted against this said that his party moved heaven and earth to deny the people their right. They used a stealth clause to prohibit that. So it's a pretty clear indication of where they think the public is. If this was popular, you wouldn't try to keep the people from weighing in on it. But probably the fact that voters have rejected this 10 times indicates what would likely have happened if this had made it to the ballot. To your question of what happens in November of 2022 when the full House and several senators are on the ballot, this is going to be the opportunity for the voters to weigh in separate from this lawsuit that was filed. There were several freshmen who were going to have to stand for this vote as well as the rest of the legislature about whether or not there truly is public support to move Washington down this path of having an income tax. Now, the supporters say, don't worry about it. It's only 7%. It's only on the wealthy. We're never going to expand it. I wish I could believe them, but Washington's first sales tax is 2%. Now it's over 10% in many parts of the state. The B&O business tax was supposed to be a 2-year temporary tax that was going to be repealed during the Great Depression, and we're still paying it nearly 90 years later. And we know from experience from the federal level, when that federal income tax was first imposed at 1% on millionaires, it's now expanded to everybody at higher rates. It's just the nature of taxation And if this is left on the books, it will eventually expand.
Well, and it's actually, and it dips down. Joe Biden promises. I don't know how reliable that will be. That no family earning below $400,000 will be hit by the tax. But for Inslee's tax, it'll hit plenty of families below $400,000 in family income, right?
And it took a troubling turn throughout the debate. You know, the initial bill that the governor had proposed was a much higher rate and had a, but it did provide the marriage credit, right? So if you were a married couple, you wouldn't have a penalty and paid double the amount. When the legislature finally adopted this tax, it removed that credit for marriage. So now we have a marriage penalty. So if you file a joint return, you're going to be paying more in that tax than if you file two separate returns living underneath the same household.
It's in the way the tax works. I know it's a $250,000 if you have higher capital gains returns than that. Does it allow for people who live almost entirely, like older people, on their capital gains income? Does it have any special allowance for people in that situation?
There are several credits and exemptions in this bill to try to make it more politically possible to have gotten support for it. They did try to carve out 401ks and home sales. But the challenge with this is it's a statutory bill, and that's why I mentioned the 2% sales tax and the 2-year temporary emergency B&O tax and the 1% federal income tax. These statutory tax rates and exemptions change over time. And we can look at the last two states to adopt an income tax, New Jersey and Connecticut. Those also started very low, very targeted, but over time those rates and those bases expand. It's unfortunately just what happens once lawmakers open up a new tax.
Well, particularly something like this. Look, get all the information about what this means to you. And a reliable source for that information is Washington Policy Center. Go to the big green banner at our website at michaelmedved.com. The WPC does great work on behalf of common sense governance, which has been in short supply in Olympia in recent months. Go to WPC, go to the banner at michaelmedved.com and find out more. And Jason, thanks for your good work and for being a stalwart voice for sanity in a den of, well, sometimes strangeness in Olympia, Washington. We will be right back with more on the intra-party battles coming up.
Great show. I listen to you every day.
The Michael Medved Show.
Michael Medved Show, there are a number of Republicans across the country who are doing exceptionally well. One of them is Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. And he has just created a new initiative with the legislature. It hasn't been passed yet, but I think it will be. And it's exactly the kind of thing, it seems to me, that Republicans ought to be pushing. Number one, because it's right, it's just, it's important, it's timely, and it's also going to be very popular. And it's going to unite Republicans and divide Democrats. That's what we want to do. We don't need to divide Republicans and unite Democrats. That's something we shouldn't be eager to do. Here is Governor DeSantis announcing his new push with the legislature on a crucial issue, which is policing and our police officers. It's clip 17,
Jerry. I asked the legislature in this legislative session, we need to do bonuses for law enforcement. Some wanted to defund the police. We're funding the police and then some.
Okay, this is a good idea. We played yesterday that unbelievable interchange between a sheriff's deputy in L.A. County and an unidentified teacher, she said she was, who kept insulting, not assaulting, but insulting the police officer without terrible consequences. She was driving without a license. She was fiddling with her iPhone while she was driving, which is illegal in California. And he stopped and asked her for identification. And she gave him an ethnic slur. She called him a Mexican murderer. This is the police officer. And the police officer handled it with maximum amount of calm and aplomb and professionalism. And which I think that is far, far, far more representative of police officers nationwide than Derek Chauvin. It truly is. Think about it. And the opposition to DeSantis is possibly or likely to be Charlie Crist. Now, he may have a tough primary. He's running for the Democratic nomination this time. Charlie Crist was governor of Florida for one term as a Republican. Didn't do that well. Then later ran for U.S. Senate as an independent. Then ran for governor again as a Democrat. And has run for Congress and actually been elected to Congress as a Democrat. So he's running this time, having run as an independent and a Republican. He's running this time again as a Democrat against Ron DeSantis. And he announced his candidacy 2 days ago. And what he said was just an illustration of almost everything that's wrong with the modern Democratic Party. This is clip five. Listen.
Governor DeSantis' vision of Florida is clear. If you want to vote, he won't help you. If you're working, he won't support you. If you're a woman, he will not empower you. If you're an immigrant, he won't accept you. And if you're facing discrimination, he won't respect you. If you're sick, he won't care for you. If you're impacted by climate change, and we all are, he won't even believe you. That's not a vision for our state.
Okay, you notice that he is basically suggesting that without the government, without the governor, all these individuals who are aggrieved or need something are dependent on the government. If you're sick, he won't care for you. If you're a woman, he won't empower you. You need the governor to empower women? Really? It is outrageous. And look, I think that Governor DeSantis could boost his stock very dramatically with a decisive victory in the governor's race. One of the problems for Charlie Crist is that a former police chief in Orlando, 28 years a cop, married to another high-ranking cop, and a former police chief himself, and a sheriff in the county, is Val Demings. And you may remember her from the impeachment hearings against President Trump. She is a black Democrat and a female. And frankly, if she does decide to run, and there are indications she is going to run for the Democratic nomination, she would be a far more challengeable, formidable challenger to Governor DeSantis. Now, if he's running as Val Demings, then that race will get a great deal of attention. And assuming that DeSantis comes out on top, I think he will, that could boost his potential presidential campaign even more. Speaking of potential presidential campaigns, there is one more campaign by President Trump, and it has nothing to do really with 2022. It has to do with right now. President Trump says Facebook must pay a political price for banning his account. So says the New York Post. The story, former President Donald Trump today said Facebook and other big tech companies that censored him must pay a political price, responding to Facebook's decision to continue a ban on his account. Quote, "What Facebook, Twitter, and Google have done is a total disgrace and an embarrassment to our country. Free speech has been taken away from the president of the United States because the radical left lunatics are afraid of the truth, and the truth will come out anyway, bigger and stronger than ever before. That's what he said in an emailed statement from his new platform. The people of our country will not stand for it. These corrupt social media companies must pay a political price and must never again be allowed to destroy and decimate our electoral process. There was a response to President Trump, and the response came from Facebook's oversight board director, Thomas Hughes. Here's what he had to say. It's clip six.
I mean, the decision is very clear insofar as, you know, the board has found that the suspension of former President Trump was necessary to keep people safe, that the actions of the former president encouraged and legitimized violence and constituted what the board has termed a severe violation of the Facebook rules.
Okay. Do I think that's a good decision? No, I think it's a lame decision. I think it's silly. I think it's self-destructive. I don't think it's helpful. Do I think that they should pay a political price, that Congress should take action against them because they have censored President Trump or anybody else? Absolutely not, because this is not censorship. You'll notice President Trump does not have a difficult time getting his views out there to the public. And he can build his own damn platform. And in fact, I think he's in the process of doing that. That's happening right now. And the idea that you trust the government more than private competition, do I believe that these big media companies are biased? I do, absolutely. Do they have a right to be biased? Sure. Does the Wall Street Journal have a right to be biased? Sure. Does Fox News? Absolutely. Does this radio show? You bet. The idea that you want to have government involved in monitoring or limiting the ability of internet platforms to select what they want to include and not include, I think is appalling. And frankly, it would lead us back to something like the fairness standard, which President Reagan got rid of, which allowed the emergence of talk radio, to have the government say, well, you have to be fair. You have to allow all points of view or balanced points of view or any point of view monitoring by the government is ridiculous and gets us back to the core problem with what Charlie Crist was saying, where he says, if you're a woman, he won't empower you. If you're poor, he won't help you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Talking about Governor DeSantis. I remember, and it made a very deep impression on me, actually, when I was a kid, there was a billboard in Southern California, and it was there for a long time, and it made a very big impression because it had a great slogan. It had a picture of Uncle Sam looking kind of disapproving. It was a big picture, it was in color, and he looked likable Uncle Sam. There he is with a hat and the little white beard. And it said, he's your uncle, not your dad. And that's basically part of what conservatism is all about, is we need government to help us just like we need our dad. But we don't need government to supervise everything. We don't need government to, quote, perfect everything. Because usually when that happens, well, the results aren't so great. We'll talk about why that's the case and other examples coming up in This Greatest Nation on